So now Vidyakaya is going to talk a bit about mantra with a talk entitled, I Know Nothing.
Yes, I was asked for a title about an hour ago, and it seemed the most appropriate. I've just been sitting there just trying to think of an appropriate way of sort of following on from that. Keep telling myself my usual mantra of stop comparing, stop worrying, stop complaining. And I still feel a bit like Celine Dion going after Aretha Franklin or something. That's what I'm but, Sadhu, anyway, fabulous. So, I was going to start this by getting various people to chant the mantra in different ways, but I think we've had enough of chanting mantras. You've got it, but I think you've probably internalised the Padmasambhava mantra pretty well by now. So I'm going to just talk about fairly kind of left-brained, what does it mean? How can we interpret it? So we feel the effects of the mantra. It invigorates us. It's earthy. It's quite male, primal. Bring us to life. I mean, something I use, if I'm feeling quite a bit depressed or lifeless, I'll use the Padmasambhava mantra. Get myself, kind of gives me a kick out the bum and gets me moving. Whereas if I'm feeling stressed and anxious, I'm more likely to turn to White Tara, who kind of these moonbeams and calms me down. So I do use them as medicine sometimes, I'm not sure. So, as Arthur Siddhi was saying yesterday, mantras don't really have literal meanings. You can't just sort of translate them. But there is meaning. And Lama Govinda wrote a book about the Avalokiteshvara Mantra, which is the foundations of Tibetan Buddhism, which is about that thick. And it's just about that mantra. There are many ways of explaining a mantra, and many ways of talking about it. So this is just one version. And in fact, I have to confess now, I didn't actually write this talk. Padmavajra effectively wrote this talk. Some time ago, he kind of summed up the Padmasambhava mantra just in one very brief sentence, which I thought was fantastic. And I asked him, you know, if he could remember what he'd said. He couldn't remember what he said, and he wrote quite a few lines and wrote my talk for me. You know, so I'll be quoting Padmasambhava. So, it begins, obviously, Om Ah Hum. And even this has quite a few different interpretations. So, the city said it means body, speech, and mind. And when we salute the shrine, we quite often go, Om, Ah, Hum. But this is actually body, speech, mind, which is heart, which is chitta. So these are the three aspects of practice. So what Padmavajra said, through chanting Om Ah Hum, we invoke the goal of the Dharma life, the complete transformation of body, speech, and mind into the Trikaya of the Buddha. I'm not going to explain the Trikaya, that would take too long. But the Buddha is seen as three bodies in Mahayana Buddhism. So, an alternative explanation, which comes from Lama Govinda, he speaks of Om as being opening to the universe, kind of like the crown chakra opening. Opening up to spiritual influence. And then Hum takes us down into the world. It's more the compassion aspect, or bringing wisdom and compassion down. He says, if Om is the ascent towards universality, then Hum is the descent of the state of universality into the depths of the human heart. So that's always kind of worked for me as well. Just a sense of like this, we open up, we need to bring it down, we need to embody it. So R, he says elsewhere, is a call to action. So it's related to speech, but it relates to skillful means. Sometimes people say, yeah, this is wisdom, compassion, wisdom and compassion together. Then they have to be together, you have to bring them together. Yes, someone was asking me about this, the moon and sun. On most of these images, I was talking about left and right brains and different energies, but actually it's wisdom and compassion again. Sun, I think, being compassion, right hand, left hand being wisdom. So, mantras have many layers of meaning. So, Vajraguru. So, as Siddhi said, this is simply naming the guru in some sense. In fact, when we recite at the end of the puja, we're following Bhante's tradition, and it's, you say Vajraguru Padma, we put it all in one. So we could say that's just Padmasambhava's name. But anyway, breaking it up here. Through chanting Vajraguru, this is Padma Vajra, through chanting Padma Vajraguru, we invoke the wisdom guru that shows us the way. So Vajra, there's lots of Vajras around. There's a Vajra. That showed you, it's got the clearest one, sort of in this left hand. Left hand? Yes, so Vajrapani holds on his left hand. Padmasambhava holds it in his right hand. It's variously translated as diamond or thunderbolt or diamond thunderbolt. Vajra is a symbol of absolute reality, symbol of enlightenment. And very briefly, you could say it's samsara and nirvana arising from the void. Both, it's a symbol of non-duality as well. Got the five wisdoms and the five poisons. Not two. So we're invoking Padmasambhava as our guru, and he's a Vajra guru, the ultimate guru. Quite often the Vajra is just put in front of anything really to make it just a really good one. This is really the best one you could possibly have. It's the Vajra guru. Vajra cornflakes. Yeah, whatever. He can cut directly through to reality like a diamond thunderbolt with his wrathful compassion. He's someone you're completely committed to. So, do we have anyone in our lives we see as a guru? I do a Padmasambhava puja once a week on a Thursday, which is a guru yoga practice. And in that, you put your own personal guru above your head, and then above him goes first Padmasambhava, then Amitabha, Avalokiteshvara, then Amitabha. Anyway, it's supposed to be this huge kind of Eiffel Tower of gurus above your head. It's a bit tricky. But who do I think of as my personal guru, really? Sometimes it's Bhante. Sometimes Bhante fits up there nicely. Sometimes it's Padmavajra. I think it's going to have to be Suryavamsa occasionally from now on. Quite often it's Suryaketu, my Dharma buddy from Tunbridge Wells. But I realised recently on the Beauty and Eros retreat that in reality the order is my guru. In all its messiness and complications and beauty, the order is the teacher I'm committed to, above all. And as you were saying, I think, there's this myth, Bhante's myth of the order as being the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara, with all the arms of Avalokiteshvara. So, yeah, all with different skills and capacities. So, order as guru, it's not too far-fetched. But Bhante's also spoken of the importance of finding our inner guru. So how do we need an inner guru in order to know whether someone is our guru. You don't just sort of get any old guy and just go, oh yeah, I'll be my guru, I'll do what you want. Because a guru relationship is intense and intimate. And in the Vajrayana, you do anything your guru tells you to. He tells you to chop your arm off, you chop your arm off. It's a bit extreme. We need to know ourselves really well. We need to trust our own instincts. Confession, it took me quite a long time to really feel I can trust this movement. I don't trust easily. It's still an ongoing process. But even, perhaps especially, when I find people difficult or incomprehensible, they are still my teachers. We have to have faith, but not blind faith. We have to check in with our gut feelings, our inner sense of rightness or fitness, and also check in with our friends, confess our difficulties, work them out. It's a process. Shraddha is a process. So, Vajraguru, Padma. Padma Vajra says, through Padma, we invoke the great longing and love for the beauty of the Guru and the goal he points to, and a fearless love for all beings. Through Padma, we invoke the great longing and love for the beauty of the Guru and the goal he points to, and a fearless love for all beings. So Padma, of course, means lotus. Padmasambhava means the lotus ball. It's supposed to have arisen from a red lotus in the middle of a lake as an 8-year-old boy, with all siddhis intact, I believe. It was just there. And some forms of, some images of Padmasambhava show him as a young boy. So a lotus is soft and alive, growing up from mud and slime, up through water, producing beautiful, pristine flowers that open in the sunlight. It represents life, tenderness, and beauty. So Padmasambhava is a Vajra guru, with his wrathful expression, his skulls, and his magical powers. But he's also beautiful and filled with compassion. We need to fall in love with him. That's just a confession. It's a proud statement. I sometimes use a photograph of the actor Tom Hardy, which I found on the internet. It's actually a selfie. It came from his MySpace page. And he just looks, you know, Tom, if you know Tom Hardy, he can either look like an angel or he can look like a complete thug, just depending whether he shaves or not, really. This one, he is shaven. But it's just a real kind of tenderness and humour and virility about him. It's just very beautiful. I'm going to one day use it as a painting, use it to begin a painting. So there's something here about wisdom and compassion. So these are qualities which seem in direct opposition to one another, but they're both essential and intrinsic to an enlightened being. So then we have siddhi. Again, I quote Padmavajra. Through siddhi, we invoke all the attainments of the path and the endlessly creative, skillful means to connect people to the way. Through siddhi, we invoke all the attainments of the path and the endlessly creative, skillful means to connect people to the way. So siddhi literally means magical power, magical attainments. There's a whole list of them that are supposed to arise as we practice more deeply. Things like clairvoyance and the ability to walk through walls. So these minor siddhis can be handy, but are not to be boasted of or made too much of. So you've been walking through walls. And it's very nice. But just use the door. The highest siddhi, of course, is enlightenment. Padmavajra has also said previously, this was what I remembered from his initial kind of translation of the mantra, is here we're asking Padmasambhava for a teaching to enable us to achieve these siddhis, these attainments, and develop the most skillful means of communicating to help us become bodhisattvas, help us lead beings to enlightenment. And here I'm going to be very lazy and just quote my favourite couple of teachings from Padmasambhava, which is said to be Padmasambhava's own words. So don't worry if you don't understand any of it, just let the words go in. And the first is from a text called The Advice to the Fortunate Women. And I was talking to Suryavanta about this the other day, and I've only ever seen advice to one particular woman, Queen Nan Chung. And I did wonder who these other women were supposed to be, but apparently it's all there in the seminar. So if you want to know more about it, look up the seminar on Free Buddhist Audio. So anyway, this is just an excerpt from The Advice to Queen Nan Chung. Listen. To begin with, pay urgent attention to impermanence. Strongly turn your mind towards going for refuge to the three jewels, and be truly open to the spiritual influence of others. These are the preliminaries without which no means exist. After that, disposing yourself physically to be calm, as in an empty house the raindrops slowly gather, relax. Do not force your mind or body. Since the tranquility of shunyata is the foundation, by forcibly turning your mind to emptiness, you chase misconceptions. In the thoughts which arise, understanding will come without doing anything. Again and yet again, work on whatever estranges you from meditation. lay bare whatever arises, good thoughts and bad thoughts alike. The child who knows his way carries along the path every harmless thing he happens upon, and nothing that harms him. During the time of insight, which is surrounded by a calm and gentle aura, openness and appearance are inseparable. This is the real foundation, without which no means exist. During the period of meditation, there is not anything. It is simply open. But when you waver towards appearances, delusions will arise. After careful examination, understand not to discriminate, to neither accept nor reject. As anything can happen, peace will arise from within. Even when you do not meditate, for personal growth you need to exercise effort. If you do so without accomplishing anything thereby, know that at all times realization is your own nature, and from within act for the benefit of all beings. Unceasingly do Dharma actions. When you purify yourself of your faults, realization will come naturally from within. Seal your virtuous actions with prayers and a dedication for the purpose of all beings. Without such prayers and dedication, no means exist. Not falling into errors of excitement or passivity, be filled with confidence. Here in a few words of great import, my preparation, enactment and fulfillment, the doctrine's deepest reaches of this life as of the life to come. It gives me a chill to think that Padmasambhava actually said that. So to begin with, reflect on impermanence. Deepen your going for refuge. Have faith in your teachers. When in meditation, relax. Don't force things. And yet he says effort is required. Again and yet again, work on whatever estranges you from meditation. Now Subhuti said that if we're not in dhyana, then we must be experiencing one or more of the hindrances, by definition. Threw me slightly, but it's of course perfectly true, perfectly sensible. So what is it which is keeping us from concentration? Fear, laziness, resentment, good at that one, doubt, name the demon. I think that's our next talk. So that's cool. I find it's usually some kind of craving for things to be other than they are. Lay bare whatever arises, good thoughts and bad thoughts alike. So he describes a state of complete openness, of non-dual awareness in the next verses, perhaps a bit beyond most of us just yet. But then he says, for personal growth you need to exercise effort, and also from within act for the benefit of all beings, and unceasingly do Dharma actions. So there's a combination here of instructions to both surrender and to make enormous effort, which seems to me fundamental to the spiritual life. So we have to work with a sense of self-power, effort, and other power, surrender, surrendering to something much bigger than ourselves, trusting our teachings and thinking deeply for ourselves. So finally, hum. Padmavajra says, through hum, we invoke the essence of Guru Padmasambhava. And so I'll give you my second favourite teacher, the teaching that Padmasambhava said was his most profound. I do not know, I do not have, I do not understand.